Hello and welcome to the Heat Unmissables podcast, possibly the world's only weekly pop culture podcast, although it probably isn't, but we're sticking with that. Yes, Kay. That's the voice of Kay Ribeiro, one of my esteemed colleagues. I'm also joined by another esteemed colleague, Steph Seelan.
Hello.
The same esteemed colleagues who join me every single week to look through the best things in pop culture. And what a week it is.
Wow.
Not only do we have the new series of Game of Thrones, which we're going to review, we've also got the film Dunkirk, possibly, spoiler alert, the best film of the year. We've got some craft show on Channel 4 that Kay forced us to watch.
Yeah.
We've got Top of the Lake 2, possibly the most highly anticipated new TV series for me for ages. Iwan Rheon's got an album out.
Oh, God. Well, who knew?
It's been out for 2 years, but we're reviewing it anyway.
We just heard about it, though.
Exactly. And we said we'd review it last week, so we will, because we keep our promises. And something called Ozark, which
what
is on
name, but
it's the
place.
Latest drama to hit Netflix this Friday in full, and it stars Jason Bateman. And on top of all of that, we're going to talk about the new Doctor Who, which was just announced this weekend, and I actually spoke to the new Doctor Who admittedly months ago, but I talked to her about the possibility of her being Doctor Who,
no.
Jodie Whittaker. Yes.
What'd she say?
Well, she said she was kind of, she joked about it mainly. So, first of all, should we start with that Doctor Who news?
Yeah,
I know
yeah.
you two are huge Whovians.
No, I've been converted.
But I like a hullabaloo. Yeah, is what I like.
You like a hullabaloo?
Yeah, I like it when people get all whipped up for no reason.
People are whipped up about this.
They are, yeah.
The ridiculous Why? People, not the pogs, the ridiculous contingent.
Oh, she's great. I loved her in Broadchurch.
The Rupogs, ridiculous people
yeah,
on the ground.
The Rupogs. It's the new thing.
Yesterday morning, on I woke up and Radio 5 Live had a phone in, which they have, and they talked about the new doctor being female, being Jodie Whittaker, and what people thought. And they did have, because a lot of people are saying, oh, well, there aren't that many people who are complaining about it, and you know, liberals are imagining they are. But actually, they had loads of angry, white, male, middle-aged people phoning in to say they were
really?
Furious, and it was political correctness
gone mad. The Moaning
Malcolms.
It was political correctness
gone mad.
They've talked about having a woman for so long.
Why in 2017 are we having a discussion whether a woman could or should
it's
play
insane.
A fictional role?
But people are saying, because they're called Time Lords, the alien race that the Doctor is part of is called the Time Lords. And people are so literal about this phrase. Literally, people are going, and one bloke kept going on about it. They're called Time Lords, not Time Ladies.
Not Time Lordettes.
The only reason that is complete nonsense is because for the last few years, they've established quite clearly the Master, who is also a Time Lord and is the Doctor's nemesis on the show, as I'm sure you both know full well.
Of course I do.
Of course we do.
Stop telling me things I know.
Regenerated into a Missy, who's a woman. So a Time Lord, the Master, has been a woman, effectively, for the last few years. And that, so they've completely established the fact that a Time Lord can regenerate from a man into a woman. Anyway, so it's all dealt with in the mythology of the show.
Right.
But more importantly, Jodie Whittaker is a brilliant actress, isn't she?
Right.
I mean, that's the point.
Exactly. So it's not even like a rubbish person they're getting in. They're getting a bona fide actress who's fantastic. What I mean, I think if the Moaning Malks and the Negative Nancy's don't watch, then, I mean, isn't that a good thing?
Can I ask an actual scientific question about Doctor Who, because obviously it's based on science.
Yeah.
Right. Is Doctor Who a shape-shifting alien?
Yeah, he is. He is.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. So why does it matter?
Well, it doesn't. I mean, it absolutely 100% doesn't. I mean, it does matter in one sense, because obviously this character has been played by a man, because everyone has assumed it should be a man for the last, you know, since it began decades ago. And all 12 previous incarnations have been played by a man. So, you know, this has blown the mind of small-minded people who can't, but they've laid the groundwork, is what I'm saying, in the show. So if you're a fan of the show, you know full well this is all absolutely fine. And if you're a human being with any common sense, you know it's absolutely fine. So it is just this tiny, weird minority of people who see it as part of the whole, you know, feminization of pop culture.
Oh,
you know, Wonder Woman, you know. I mean, these people complain about Ghostbusters, the female version. Wonder Woman, by the way, on course to become the highest grossing box office film of the year in America, which is going to be brilliant.
Boy, do anyway, the stats.
Anyway, it's the point is Jodie Whittaker is brilliant. So of course she was Chris Chibnall, who took over the running of Doctor Who, is taking it over from now on after the Christmas special. She was in Broadchurch, she wrote Broadchurch. So that's why I brought it up in the interview I did with her about Broadchurch back in February. And she was like, oh yeah, I could be in Doctor Who.
Boyd knew.
So
sensed it.
Will Pearl Mackey still be the assistant?
No one knows. We don't know.
Oh,
the rumour has it that she won't, and that she'll have just been a one-season companion, which is a shame because she was brilliant.
And she was really good. I liked her. And she's lovely. And will they now, to just appease all the, I don't know, these moany Whovians, will they get a male...
Big question. Steph,
in their rightful role, just standing on the side, assisting all us women out there?
That is a very interesting question. I mean, I think we don't know again. That's a big decision they have to make, because I think it would be really exciting if they go with a female companion and the show's effectively two women running around the universe.
I mean, I think some people will implode.
They will. But I mean, I don't mind either way personally, but it'll be fascinating to see which way they go, whether they go with. There've been male companions down the years, but there hasn't been one.
I just think they're going to go. People are going to go nuts if it's two women, though, won't they? If they're already going nuts because the Time Lord is now Time Lordette, then oh my god, two women. They're just going to. Do you think they'll stop watching?
No, I think. Well, if whoever stops watching, fine. No, you know, I don't really care.
You're stupid. 60-year-old
white males stop watching, fine. But it's a family show. It's for kids, and kids. Mm. I think young girls are going to be hugely excited about it. In the same way they're excited about the lead of Star Wars being a woman. You know.
First Beyonce, then Michelle Obama, now a Time Lordette. Oh my god, it's just going crazy out there.
So that is the new Doctor Who. And now, of course, it's time for our weekly talk about what we've all been watching and discussing and thinking about this week in the world of pop culture. Steph Seelan.
I'm going to jump in and say, we reviewed it a few weeks ago, Fearless, with a delightful Helen McCrory. Now, cast your mind back to when I cast aspersions on the inclusion of John Bishop in Fearless, okay?
Not only did you cast aspersions, you said he was
rubbish.
I'm paraphrasing, shit. Okay,
you wanted to text him, you said.
What I will say is that he is barely in it now, and he's gone off to Norway to do some photography photos. Thing. Okay, so
that's a direct result of listening to this. They've got rid of him.
Yeah. I think he jarred, as I said, and now it's. I mean, I'm really enjoying it. It's fantastic. Helen McCrory's great. I can see her doing
this
for a long time.
You're still slagging him off, then.
I'm just saying that I said something, and then on screen it happened.
For a minute, I thought you were going to kind of do a reverse ferry and say you were wrong and admit that you were wrong, but it's actually the opposite. It's like you were so right, they've got rid of him.
He's ferreting in the same direction.
McCrory is lovely, and she does want. I interviewed her for this very magazine, and she was absolutely incredibly nice, actually. And she did say she would like to carry on doing it for years. She's so into it.
Well, I wasn't as much into the first episode, but now the Bishop's got the old heave ho in Norway. It's excellent.
I've got to catch up with it. Yeah.
Very good.
Kay.
As you know, I'm still. Very deeply immersed into Love Island. Now, I'm not going to go on about it because I know you two look down on it.
How long has it been going on for? 75 weeks?
Is that
how
and long? It's ending next week. Sorry. So we're gearing up for the finale. It is very exciting. Just want to say that I still cannot stand Olivia. But anyway, I'll move on to episodes, which is the sitcom starring Matt LeBlanc, Tamsin Gregg, and Stephen Mangan, which I went to the screening of because Series 4 is returning.
Exclusive.
Yes, that is exclusive. I can reveal.
Is it embargoed? Are you allowed to talk about it?
I'm not going
to
say anything more than it's coming out mid-September.
I'm just checking.
And it's the final season, so get ready for that.
The final season. Yeah.
And Matt LeBlanc was there at the screening, wasn't he?
Doing he was. Q&A. Yeah.
Was he hilarious?
Joey. He was very amusing. And they said that they were all, like, even though they're sad that it's over, they're happy to go out on a high because they think don't stay past your...
Yes. I like episodes, yeah. It's good.
What have you been watching, Boyd?
Well, actually, I went to a screening this week of a thing called Man in the Orange Shirt, which I wasn't even going to mention, but now you mentioned screenings, you've inspired me, because I saw it on the same day as Dunkirk, which I'm about to. So I had this incredible day of screenings. So I went to see Dunkirk about 4 o'clock at the Science Museum IMAX. Do you know there's an IMAX at the Science Museum?
I didn't know,
yeah,
I didn't.
It's the second biggest IMAX cinema in the country, and it's
What's
within
the, biggest one? The one on
bowels
the roundabout?
Of the biggest one is the BFI one at Waterloo, yeah. This is, it's a huge thing, and it's been within the Science Museum. It's almost like, how do they fit in? It's like a TARDIS situation. And it takes about 10 minutes to get there. Anyway, that's by the by. After that, which I'm going to talk back to Dunkirk in a minute, I had a race against time. As soon as it finished, I had to go to the BFI on the South Bank to watch the new BBC One thing, one-off drama called Man in the Orange Shirt, and which is part of their gay season commemorating the 50th anniversary of the decriminalisation of most homosexual acts, not all. And anyway, it's brilliant.
Who's
absolutely
in it?
Phenomenal.
Anyone
Vanessa Redgrave's in it. This is the main thing. Because she was on the did the Q&A, and she only agreed that she would do the Q&A on the morning of it. Imagine that.
Stressful for them.
Stressful, yeah. And she was incredible. She was such a legend. And she was holding forth just about everything, like about Donald Trump and the state of the world and this, that, and the other. It was unbelievable. And it's a brilliant show. So watch out for that coming soon. But the main thing is Dunkirk.
Okay, so clear your ears for 35 minutes while Boyd talks about Dunkirk.
I could talk about it for about 10 hours.
Yeah. Well, let's get started.
I feel like it's getting there.
Are you taking the...
please.
No, we're really excited.
That's fine.
Because we all saw all the pictures today from the premiere. Yeah, it's very exciting, and everyone had a lot to say. But
Steph and I didn't get to go, so you're our main source.
You weren't allowed to go. Yeah. You were considered too dangerous.
But in case he was there, of places we can't go because we're considered too dangerous.
Yeah. So this is, you'll have read about it, obviously, all over the place. This is Christopher Nolan of the Dark Knight trilogy, Inception and Interstellar fame. One of the greatest directors in the world today, if not the greatest.
I would say he's probably my favourite director, actually.
Maybe me too, yeah. He's also a writer. He usually co-writes his stuff with his brother. This he wrote on his own and has directed, obviously, on his own. And it's his big war film telling the story of Dunkirk, as the title would suggest. Do you know what the story of Dunkirk is, you youngsters?
I don't. I wouldn't mind a little overview. I do.
So the big thing about the reason why Dunkirk is such an incredible story is 400,000 British troops, actually Allied troops, the British and French, were stranded on the beach. So it's this small coastal town in France. And the Germans had arrived, and the Germans basically over.
Boyd's looking at me really intensely, but I'm the one who knows the story. And Keisha doesn't know.
Oh, I'm just looking at you both.
Oh, right, okay.
I incorporate you both in my eye line.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. So these 400,000 troops were stranded, and the Germans basically had them at their disposal. They had bombers overhead in the air. They had people on the ground, Germans on the ground,
German pogs.
Yeah, ready to attack them. And they were kind of occupying, they'd invaded and occupying this town. And so the troops had to be somehow rescued. They were just trapped. They were either going to be killed by the Germans. And there was like, what way out was there? So what they did was they tried to send ships, big British, you know, as big as ships as they could find, but there were hardly any available and they couldn't afford, you know, the British government couldn't afford to send them out. It was a big thing. It was a big emergency. So in the end, what they did, very famous, the most famous element of it is they got all British private citizens who had boats and yachts and anything at all that was capable of going on the sea to go there and to help with the rescue thing. And one of the brilliant things, one of the amazing things about the film is, if you don't know that, it's a fact and people do know about it, but it's an amazing moment.
It is a fact. Everyone,
It's an amazing moment when that element of the story happens. But this is a whole overview of, the whole story is split into, the narrative of the film is split into three. So, and it explains it at the beginning. So it literally says on the screen, it says land and that period of time is, in depicting the film, is a week. Air, that period of time depicting the film, is an hour.
Yeah.
And another period of time is a day. See.
But really...
So it intercuts throughout the film with these three settings, with three sets of characters on land, air, and
jarring?
Sea. So it's so you think, oh my God, this is confusing, but you get used to it. So... But after about 10, 15 minutes of this stuff, you realise that you're going to see certain incidents that take place in that hour played out later in the bit that takes place in a week or a day. Do you see what I mean? So you see incidents from different points of view, different characters' points of view at different times in the film, and it makes it incredibly clever. It's like this incredibly immersive experience, like you're immersed in the world of being a soldier or an airman or whatever, or a sailor in the middle of the situation. And it is absolutely astonishing. It's filmed in... the IMAX format, so it's like a massive, massive... Go and see it in the biggest screen you can find, preferably an IMAX screen, and it literally, you're kind of like, you're living in this incredible world and trying to survive. And it's just about the soldiers, really, trying to survive. How are they going to be able to escape? Are they going to be rescued? Yeah. Can they avoid being killed by the Germans? And, of course, Harry Styles is one of the main gang. There's like three... or four young soldiers who we follow from their point of view throughout it, and he's one of those soldiers. The main one is Fionn Whitehead, but the whole all the stuff about on the ground with these young soldiers is seen through Fionn Whitehead's point of view, the young actor. But he's very passive; he's just kind of observing it all. Whereas Harry Styles, interestingly, his character is more active and actually ends up having a key scene in the film where he's kind of behaving quite immorally, and it's all about the morality of how do you work out how to save yourself, or do you save your fellow soldiers. And he's got a key moment in that, and he's really, really good in it. And it's like nothing else you've ever seen, basically. You think you've seen, it's a war film, you know, but there's just nothing ever like this before.
I mean, awesome. I did hear Kenneth Branagh say that it's probably the closest. Obviously, you can never replicate the true horrors of war, but it is the closest you're going to get. And I think you just said it's a real immersive experience. Yeah. I cannot wait to see this.
So is your verdict, because obviously everyone was very interested in Harry Styles' debut, so is your verdict that it was a good performance?
It's completely there's nothing wrong with it. No, it's like he fits in. So it's one of the most ensemble films ever. Like, I know people say that, but really, because you're following these three groups of people, you know, and in his group who are on land trying to be rescued with these other kids, basically, he completely, if you didn't know him, if you had never heard of Harry Styles, if you're like, you know, some old people will go and see this film, we won't have heard of him, you know, probably, they won't bat an eyelid. So it's just like he's as good as the professional actors around him, you know, who've all been trained at RADA or whatever. Yeah. And he completely, he's absolutely great. Yeah. So I was, you know, I was like, I know it's a cliche, but after about, initially you're like, oh, there he is. You know, he's not in the first 20 minutes. Then he arrives and then he's in it throughout. And you're like, oh, it's Harry Styles. And you keep thinking about him and looking at his haircut and this, that and the other. And then you're like, he's just really good at this character. And he's more of a character. That's the interesting thing for me than the other soldiers, really. There's more to him, to his character. He has to do more stuff and say more stuff than his fellow soldiers in the film. And I think that's clearly why Christopher Nolan cast him.
Yeah.
No, not because he's Harry Styles. I think just because they were looking for someone with a bit of charisma and a bit of, and something extra to them. And he definitely brings it.
Well, I think that is a relief, because my only concern about this film, because as I said, I love Christopher Nolan, was that at some point I was going to go, oh, there's Harry Styles, the pop star, been put in this Dunkirk film.
Be concerned.
Okay.
There is no concern. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I've made it crystal clear. Have I made it crystal clear? This film is a masterpiece.
Because I'm a real history buff. I absolutely love, I watch a lot of documentaries. So I can't wait to see it.
Go. You've got to go and see it.
I'm very excited.
Opens on Friday. Let's move on to the meat, as we like to call it, of the week. Let's start with Top of the Lake 2, China Girl. It's actually called Top of the Lake, China Girl. It starts next Thursday, 27th of July, on BBC Two at 9 o'clock. And let me say now, in case I forget to mention, the BBC iPlayer, it will be making available the rest of the series, the whole series, in box set / you know, streaming Netflix style. It's all dropping that night, which is brilliant.
No! Yes. I know, but I don't want it to be dropped. I'm just saying.
Why
right
not?
Now. No, because I really enjoyed the first episode and I want to enjoy it on a weekly basis. So I'm not going to binge it.
Old school.
I'm doing it old school. That's how good it is.
You're going to binge
it,
aren't you?
Oh my God, I'm going to binge it.
I've already started binging it.
Yeah.
Did you watch Top of the Lake 1?
Yeah, I
get the feeling you did.
I love it.
Would
Top
you like to
Lake.
Fill us in on the whole background / Top of the Lake 2? You know, where do we pick up?
Right,
et cetera,
okay. So the incredible Elizabeth Moss, she of Mad Men and of Top of the Lake 1.
And The Handmaid's Tale.
And most Handmaid's recently. Tale, of course, which is still... Is it still on
still
now?
Going?
Yeah, it's still on. So she is a policewoman, and in the first Top of the Lake... Do you want me to tell you what happened in the first Top of the Lake?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so in the first Top of the Lake, she is drafted in because there's a mystery... she's drafted into New Zealand, and there's a mystery about a girl who has gone missing. And she's kind of drafted into her old hometown to find out what has happened to this girl. I'm not going to give away any spoilers, because if you haven't watched the first Top of the Lake, you really, really should. But the dual story in the first Top of the Lake is that she goes back to her hometown and she has to confront some demons of her own past. And also she's got family issues. Her mother is dying and she's got an old boyfriend there. And she's also got a terrible secret. But I don't want to say too much else about it, because otherwise it just gives the whole
thing. And I'm
going
to go back and watch that, actually.
But I won't, because it's really, really good. Now, it kind of brings me on to the point that I felt when I started watching this, that if you hadn't watched Top of the Lake, the first series, you would have been very confused about why she was so anguished. Because to fill you in on where this starts,
she's very traumatised, isn't
she?
She's
really traumatised. It begins, she's back in Sydney. She was originally from Sydney. She's back in Sydney. She's back in the police service. And she's obviously come back to work after a trauma. And she's reading a letter, which is... I'm trying to say this without saying giving it too much away.
I think you can give away... I mean, she solved the crime in New Zealand.
She solved the crime in New Zealand.
She gave up a baby for adoption. This is all explained. This is all the premise. You know, she gave up a baby for adoption when she was a teenager.
But you don't find that out until halfway kind of through Top of the Lake 1.
Oh, right, but... Oh, okay, you don't want to spoil Top of the Lake 1, but I think we've got to... Well, you know, I'm sorry, but...
I mean, it's spoiled
me
now, so
it's fine. That's
not spoiling
the crime. I thought you were talking about the crime story of Top of the Lake 1.
Okay,
the crime
story, the thing...
I think we can say...
Okay, she had a baby, she had to give it up. But because the crime story is interwoven with her personal relationships and what happened to her and why she gave up the baby, that's why.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm not... Yeah, but we can still... I've said enough.
Sorry, Pogs, this is very convoluted. Anyway, so she's reading a letter from the baby that she gave up, and that child is now a teenager back in Sydney, and at the same time as you're kind of living it through her eyes, you see a couple who push a suitcase into the sea, and you later find out that their suitcase has a body in it. You then find out that she's looking for her daughter, and the case of the body and her daughter are interlinked in some way. And I feel that that's enough information without giving away the spoilers. What do you think?
That's a good summary.
Good summary, yeah. I think we can say that the daughter is living with her adoptive parents.
Nicole Kidman. Who is now a late-life lesbian.
Yeah, she's now with a woman.
Yeah.
And her husband, I'm actually obsessed
with that family.
Yeah, so they're living together,
aren't they? Very dysfunctionally.
Very dysfunctional. He and the daughter still get on, maybe rather slightly weirdly too closely, I felt.
I think it's very strange.
But Nicole Kidman's character, the adoptive mother, is pretty much estranged from the spoiled brat, I feel, of the daughter. I mean,
she is such a brat.
And the daughter is dating, in fact, yeah, she's dating this horrendous guy called Puss, who is doing something in this brothel. I mean, this all, again, you look at me like I'm spoiling too much. I'm not. This is stuff that happens in the first episode.
Okay,
honestly. And yeah, he takes her to this brothel, hangs out with the prostitutes in the brothel, who are, a lot of them are immigrants brought in, you know, kind of Chinese girls.
Yeah. To be fair, he seems quite nice to them. I mean, he's trying to teach them English.
He's trying to educate them, right. Yeah, exactly, yeah. But it's all being set up. These are the connections. We don't know, you know. Obviously, you know, yeah. I've watched episode two, by the way.
Okay.
So episode two, interestingly, because you're talking about the trauma the mysterious trauma, explains right at the beginning, there's a flashback in episode two that explains what's happened to it.
Kind of wish they had that at the beginning of episode
one.
Yeah,
it's very interesting. Right? Well, this is partly, maybe you should binge it.
Does it explain what happens to Robin?
Yes.
Right, okay.
So who is the main character?
Yeah, explains that what in the gap between New Zealand and Sydney, and there's a big thing that happened involving her relationship. Yeah,
well, this
and it's amazing that scene is on its own amazing. But I know you're about to say, I feel you're about to. This we should say it's co-created by Jane Campion, of The Pianist fame, this incredible filmmaker / writer. And what I was going to say before is it's just weird that the thing about Top of the Lake One was that it was a crime story, yes, and it was a whodunit, and there was an answer to that, and that she solved the crime, but it was also a completely bizarre set of characters doing stuff that, behaving in a way and saying stuff that other norm characters in TV shows don't really do. And I think that's the genius of it for me.
It's truly original.
And that's carried on even more in this series, I think. You know, you get... So Gwendolyn Christie of Game of Thrones plays
her
new partner, just doing weird... At one point in the first episode, she just starts doing a song and dance
thing. She had a helmet on.
Yeah, a cycle helmet on. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I did think that was random, but I loved it.
Yeah, random. People do and say random stuff. There's a whole bit... There's this group of young guys who gather in a coffee shop. And what are they doing?
The geeks are basically just reviewing the prostitutes.
They're reviewing the prostitutes, but you don't really, you know, and that kind of we go back to them throughout the thing, and they're doing and saying stuff that's really weird and dodgy. Anyway, I think it's incredible because it's got that. There is the crime story, interested in that, but I think it's mainly about how weird and bizarre people are. The spoiled brat teenager is being really horrible to her mum.
Firstly, I think people are just generally weird anyway. So I didn't find them that weird. I didn't find them that weird because I think, people are weird. And also, I kind of didn't feel that spoilt brat thing. I didn't think of her as spoilt because she was obviously so traumatised by the breaking up of her adoptive parents. And I think that just came through immediately, that she completely blamed her mum. She found her mum, played by Nicole Kidman, she found her mum kind of like, she just couldn't stand her and she didn't want to support. Her mum was obviously a strong female character and she just didn't like her. And the trauma of her parents splitting up had made her like that. I didn't feel like she was spoiled. I felt like she was just a teenager kind of who was actually... had a lot of anguish.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying there's no reason for her to be spoiled, but she is definitely still spoiled.
She was just
I didn't get that at all, really.
I found her very British.
I find her very annoying.
She's very unlikable, that word that you
very
hate about characters.
Yeah.
But
With this grotesque him, he's horrible.
She's very condescending she was just horrendous.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And quite antagonistic. Yeah. But also that guy is her boyfriend is incredibly creepy.
Incredibly creepily named.
And the relationship with her adopted father is very odd.
Yeah.
Because, you know, bearing in mind this girl is 17 and the boyfriend's in his 40s, and this father doesn't seem to bat an eyelid the fact that they almost certainly were going to her room to have sex. And in fact, brought them dessert
in bed. But that, I just thought, he's so desperate. They're obviously... he's so desperate to keep that connection with her because he can see that Nicole Kidman doesn't have that connection, that he's just like, I'll do anything. And he just loves her unconditionally. He was like, well, if she's happy, I don't want her to... Because she's got the... She seems like the kind of teenager that would run off if her parents disagreed with her. Do you know what I mean? So I think he's just being like that. Being accepted. I don't find that spoiled. I don't know why.
He is odd. Also, like how he handled the fact that his wife's become a lesbian and left him. He's very calm about it. All I'm saying is watch out for him. I bet you he's a massive wrong'un.
Yeah, I agree. Okay? Yeah, I think
any father brings sex to his daughter after, you know...
Well, a bit
post-coital.
Top of the Lake One is kind of a situation where you think, oh, don't trust anybody because,
you shouldn't. It is still a whodunit. This is still a whodunit. Yeah,
bottom line, don't trust anyone.
But what did you think, though, Kate? Because you hadn't watched Top of the Lake One, obviously, you made crystal clear.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this, and it's made me want to go back and watch Series One. I thought it would be too scary for me. I'm a scaredy cat. So, in fact, when I watched this one, I said to Boyd before I watched the first episode, am I going to be scared? He's like... No, you won't. It's just...
There will be scary stuff coming up. Not the first episode.
God.
You're fine.
Oh, God.
You're fine.
I might have to come to yours and watch it. Anyway, so I'm going to watch Series 1. And this is really, really good. And also, I like that it's such a strong female cast.
Incredible female cast.
Nicole Kidman, isn't she having the 12 months of her life? Her agent is doing very well right now.
The kid renaissance. Kidman renaissance.
It's unbelievable.
Kidnaissance.
Is it just that she's making these good choices? I don't know what it is. Post-50, she just seems to have been making these incredible choices.
I think it is. I was going to say that. I think this is one of the strongest years of any major actor in the history of television and film.
I can't believe it. She's just had success after success after success. And, of course, we didn't even mention Emmy nominations. So, Big Little Lies, 16 nods for the Emmys, by the way. Also, The Crown. I think it's 22.
That's why we didn't mention them.
22 nods.
We're going to get bogged down.
Girls snubbed. So many snubs. Jimmy Fallon snubbed. Anyway, that's an aside.
That's fine. What did you think as a Top of the Lake fan?
I am deeply in love with the character Robin. Elizabeth. Yeah. I love the character. She's just so complex and damaged. And as you know, I love it when there are characters that are deeply unlikable and hugely flawed. And so this is just everyone in this.
You're saying she's deeply unlikable. You're fine with the brat, but you think Robin is unlikable.
I think she is unlikable.
Oh, no.
She's unlikable. She's unlikable. No. She's unlikable to all the people around her. I love her as a person, but I don't think she, two of the people around her, she's unlikable.
No, the idiots.
She's harsh.
Yeah, the cops, the horrible, misogynistic.
Yeah, but
idiots.
I like that she's portrayed as... Because there's a scene in it where she's trying to teach these young police officers things.
Yeah.
And she comes across, because they don't know her backstory, she comes across as quite a bitch, doesn't she? Don't you think?
Well, but I think only because they are such
twats. Yes, but that's what
twats.
I mean. But I like the fact that they've... Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, just about. I think she herself.
Valid points.
Yeah, I think she herself is a completely brilliant person.
Yeah, I agree.
And is nice to the right people.
Yeah.
In her life, but she's surrounded by absolute twats.
Yeah.
You know, and all these the male colleagues.
The misogyny in the police force.
and all the people she comes across, apart from Gwendolyn Christie, interestingly, and even then it does take a time to warm up to Gwendolyn Christie's character.
She's been through a lot, though.
But that's for the opposite. So Gwendolyn Christie's character is clearly worships her and kind of has a crush on her because she's heard that she's done this heroic, solved this crime in New Zealand. And she doesn't like that either. She doesn't like the fact that she's being worshipped by Gwendolyn Christie. She makes that clear in episode 2, actually.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, that she finds it a bit annoying, but she does kind of in the end, I think she thought. I think it's one of the greatest things on TV of recent years.
You know, you said last week, I can't remember what we were talking about, we were saying, in The Dark, I think we were saying that it's really interesting when you care as much about the personal story of that police. This is the same as that.
I think this is even
so
more. I really do. I think it's almost like stealth. I think the crime drama for me in Top of the Lake 1 and 2 is like a stealth way of actually just having Jane Campion talking about modern people and women and men and misogyny and, you know, relationships and this, that and the other. And I think the crime's just kind of like, all right, that's the way of making people watch this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's really about the characters, I think, and I think it's phenomenal. So 5 stars from me.
5 stars from me.
5 stars from me, but do watch Top of Lake One.
As I always say at this point, in sharp contrast, craft it yourself, Kay. Why the hell have we done this series starting on Channel? No, it's starting on Channel 4 next Wednesday, 8 o'clock, to be fair. It's a primetime show, but let's face it, you are the queen of craft.
I am. I love it. I love craft. Why? Who doesn't love craft?
If you follow Kay on Instagram, you'll see that she recently made what was a little.
I gave birth to a little bowl. Yes, on the pottery wheel.
Sounds disgusting. Sounds like they have Twin Peaks.
No, because
you gave birth to a bowl.
It was so hard. I imagine it's what labour felt like, would feel like. Oh, on the pottery wheel.
Throw it on, like in Ghosts?
Yes. Does everyone talk about Ghosts?
I know, is it annoying?
You know, just imagine you with Patrick
Swayze. It's not exactly the first time I've heard it.
Manipulating your hands.
It sounds good when you guys say it, it's fine. But yeah, so...
Or the Naked Gun with the spoof of it.
Oh, God, that's
a fun, great scene.
I haven't had that, so that's
original. Come on, watch the Naked Gun. So explain what the hell Craft It Yourself is, Kay.
Okay, so it's a new craft show where three presenters, Clemency Green, who apparently makes beautifully crafted cakes and home decor devotee, Ant Anstead, a luxury car maker, and Robin Johnson, a furniture maker, all get together to make some decorative pieces for your home that everyone can do. It's affordable. And they do, mini makes.
You're laughing at your own craft program. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. What does that say? Yeah. What does that say,
Steph? I've got a lot.
You can't even keep a straight face
while describing
your own craft program. Listen. What's like the format?
Okay.
And I mean, I'm asking, well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you're looking at me like, what are you talking about?
What
there is no format.
I'm saying
this would have a format, but I don't even know what it is.
But the format is they start with a room.
It's just them
sitting
there.
Yeah, so they find a room that needs to be decorated. In this case, it's a living room that's very, disorganized. It's not decorated in the best way. So then they decide to give it a Cuban makeover. So they pinpoint different things you can make at home, should you ever wish to decorate. Why? Everyone's got their heads in their hands, which you can then bring to your home if you want to give your home a Cuban makeover. Plus, they do these mini makes, which are timed, incredibly speedy things that you can do for not a lot of money and easy
yes.
to make.
And we've got them, watch them. Ant was painting some tiles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They tried to make a woven bench and some kind of bearded chandelier. What did you think of all this stuff? Are you interested in craft, Steph?
Right. I support craft. I love art. I support craft because I love my friend Kay and she's very good at craft.
Craftanoons.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But I am one of those people that John Lewis was made for. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've got John Lewis delivery coming on this week.
Okay,
yeah.
Do you know why that
Keep
is?
Posted.
Because you don't craft. I have no problem with going and buying things that look like craft. Because one of my issues with this is like afterwards where they go, oh yeah, that bench that took us 6 hours to weave, total cost like £80. I'm like, I'm not being funny. You could probably pick those one of those up in John Lewis for £60.
Yeah.
Sturdy.
Well,
and I'm sure
It's very relaxing to make it.
Okay.
You've got it's very bespoke.
Okay.
I found it very relaxing to watch this because I did fall asleep.
Okay. Let me ask you something. Because obviously I feel like you are the queen of craft, okay?
I mean, we are bigging me up
is a point in this where Lady Clem, what she does is she goes, oh, right, what you can do to really spice up a room is you can get a glass frame and you can put leaves in the... I actually
glass
didn't hate
frame,
that and
brilliant.
And that is craft and that will spice up your room. And let me just say, at the end of the episode where with others go, how long are those leaves going to last? They were well on the turn. They were really on the turn. They were going brown.
There's some gammy leaves in a frame.
God.
Yeah.
Listen, you guys all expect me to love this, give it 5 stars, but
No, I expect you to be objective.
Oh, can I list the things that I didn't enjoy about the show?
Please do.
I love that the show is dealing with craft because, you may like take the piss, but more and more people are turning to craft as we're relaxing.
I'm not taking the piss out of craft. I'm taking the piss out of the
show. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Okay, so my problems with this show are the presenters. So it's a random mix of people who, don't really have much of a rapport. I know they do this kind of jokey arguments, but actually comes
staged.
It comes across
trying to be like the Top Gear of craft.
Yeah, and it's not working.
Faming. No,
it's not.
It's
very
the
warm.
Chris Evans years for the people who didn't enjoy.
I love Chris Evans.
I did too.
Don't bring
I did
him
too.
Into this.
But
do not
for
bring
the
him
Pogs, they might
stand
have,
down.
They got him off that show. Okay, people didn't like him.
Well. Anyway, so there's not much of a rapport, and it's just all a bit forced, and it's actually just. It's just squabbling, isn't it? Right? So that's annoying. But from a craft point of view, if you do like craft and you're watching this, it's shoddy, right? There's no detail to it. Yeah.
Scathing.
It is. All right. Well,
I'm glad we've got a craft professional.
Yeah.
Well, they just don't detail anything. So they don't like, they say one of the mini makes was you can make a tassel rope curtain, right? And so they list, the kind of cost and the time, the difficulty and this, that and the other.
Rope, tassel, curtain.
Yeah.
But they just don't... say the stages. They don't tell you where to get the stuff from. And in fact, it's so speedy, right? This thing is so speedy that they should warn you, like strobe lighting, in case you've got
Speed up the stages.
They sped it up to such an extent to show how quickly you can make it. Obviously, you can't make it that quickly. That it's barely recognisable what they're doing. It's like this blur, and it's like, and it's done. And it's like, well, oh, how did you do that?
Do you know my worst mini make on that?
Go on, tell me.
Cactus cupcakes.
Yeah.
Who the F wants to make a bloody cactus cupcake? No. That was strict. And it was actually really, really difficult. It's like, get some Oreos. Like,
and also,
what's
that got to do with craft?
I know. It's cookery.
Well, that is kind of making. But also, you know that leaf thing you were talking about?
Oh, the leaf thing is the avocado, Nigella's avocado on toast.
Listen,
of the craft.
I actually like the leaf thing. It would look good,
Lord.
Right? But the point is, listen, you're getting it for Christmas. is that she made it. And then at the end, she went, oh, yeah, I probably should have cleaned the glass beforehand. It's like, love, you're the one who's guiding us, right? Oh. So why is this so shoddy? And it's just,
there are no measurements as well, going back to your point. It's like, you know, when they're weaving.
Maybe
there
will be on screen, I don't know, like when.
It's not a graphic to come.
It's not a graphic to come. Are you sure about that?
It's not like Nadia. No, they don't go. She just goes, oh, I thought about using this coral wire and this blue wire. Well, you know, you have to go and get that stuff and how much you get and all of that kind of.
And the last thing, no, I've got one more thing.
Oh, God.
The swearing. Now, you know me, I love an F bomb as much as the next guy.
I didn't swear. Well, they said F.
They were swearing all the time. It's because
they
bleeped out.
No, they bleeped it out. Oh, yeah.
I don't care. I can lip read. I don't need to hear that. I don't need to hear any swearing on a craft show. Thank
God. Often swearing does not go.
That's my point.
No, I think you're right. They were trying to be. That's where they're trying to be all
It's all like kids. They're trying to be down with kids.
Oh, my God.
That actually just looks unprofessional.
Yeah, we've already gone on too long.
Okay, sorry.
Because it was unutterably boring. Right. And no, I'm not blaming you. I mean,
are you saying what I'm talking about?
No, I was so bored by it. I mean, that's all I can say, really. Steph?
It's no Kirsty Allsop.
I mean, as I've said before, you know, either craft or go to John Lewis, you know, because you don't need to. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
get with the John Lewis program.
Somebody else crafts for you and puts it in a department store, all right? Yeah. Do something else with your time and not watch this.
No, it was too long. Half an hour could have been fine. This is an hour long show, obviously, with Channel 4 ads, but oh my God, it really got me bored. Kay, how many stars did you give it?
I'm going to give it 2.5 stars.
Generous. Steph?
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
It was shit.
It's not. It's not going to be. Sorry. It's not
cactus gonna be, cupcakes. Come on.
Yeah. Next. Well, this is we're reviewing the Ewan Rion album. How do you pronounce his name by the name?
Ewan Rion.
No,
Ewan.
I think it's
Ewan
Rion.
It's Ewan.
Rion.
It's not like Ewan or something. Ewan.
I don't know.
Ewan. Anyway,
get him on the phone.
Ewan. I think it's Ewan. Ewan Rion.
Thank you.
Impressed myself at my Welsh accent.
I'm impressed by you as well.
Oh, is that Welsh?
That is, yeah. Oh, piss off.
So anyway, we mentioned last week that our esteemed colleague had been listening to
Sophie Bland
had been listening to the Ewan Rion album.
No, Ewan Rion.
Ewan Rion. And and we were just astonished. I was astonished, even though I kind of vaguely knew in the back of my mind that he fancied himself as a singer. You know,
but
he hadn't quite crystallised.
That's so patronising.
No.
Oh, you fancy yourself as a singer, do you?
Tapping the lips.
Apologies to Ewan for being patronising.
Ewan, and not being pronounced his name properly.
So I thought, oh, the full album was actually listening to it. Funny, it actually came out in 2015. I'm sure they're kind of reminding people that it's available because he's a bigger and bigger star, even though he's died, obviously, Ramsay Bolton died in the last
He's alive times. In real life.
He's alive in real life.
He's in, Riviera.
Yeah, he's in Riviera. Anyway, so his album is called Dinard. It's indie folk acoustic. It's 37 minutes long. It's got 11 songs. I listened to all of them. It was all right.
It's indie folk acoustic. If it has to have that many descriptions, not. Yeah, it's like when you go to a restaurant and the menu is like 275 things. You're like, oh no.
This is not a specialised on one.
No,
this is another Ray Steph rule.
Well, it is true, though. Come on.
But it was, it wasn't memorable. I don't think it was particularly memorable. Like now, I can't, you know, I'm thinking back. Oh, there was one, like the last song that had a kind of some flutes and
stuff. No, there's one song that I really like.
It's quite nice. Magic Seeds, the last song. But what were you laughing at?
What was the song that you really
liked? First. All right, you think I'm not going to come to you? I'm going to come to you in a sec.
No, wait your turn, Missy.
You wait your turn, yeah. Anyway, I've nearly finished what I've got to say. It was absolutely fine. It was basically like Ed Sheeran light, wasn't it? But slightly less annoying than Ed Sheeran, maybe. And his voice is fine.
Firstly, Ed Sheeran is not annoying.
Oh, not to me. I mean, I find him a bit, you know, a bit much.
Okay, you're wrong.
I apologise.
Okay. I'm going to describe him as a Welsh Paolo Nutini.
That's what I found it a little bit
as a compliment or an insult.
No, I like Paolo Nutini. I will just say all of the songs merged into one.
Yes, you're right, yeah.
A good way, I think.
No, a good way is the Lemonade album. This was not a great way. No. I mean, you could have it on. It's one of those albums you could have on when you're eating dinner and then everyone would go, oh, have we heard this one? And we're like, yeah, we've been listening to the same song for 12 songs.
Oh, see, I liked his voice. I thought he could definitely be on the OC soundtrack. Like there's one
the ultimate compliment.
Really? Yeah, for me, it is. You know that.
Yeah, oh, those, the OC like, light acoustic California tunes. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it could have been on the OC soundtrack.
Don't you think?
Right, yeah.
Especially Bang Bang, which is my favourite of all of the
Bang
songs.
Bang Bang. Yeah. Why was that your favourite?
Because it was the first one I listened to and the only one I listened to. I really liked his voice on it.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Furious. You didn't listen to the album.
Well, they were all the same, really.
Kay, you haven't done your homework.
I did expect you to test me.
What? We said we're going to review a thing. We've got to review it properly.
Was that your favourite song?
Is that what you were laughing at? Because I was actually describing the album. No, and you were like, I listened to one song.
Listen, I listened to a little bit more and then it's fine.
But did it sound the same as Bang Bang?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
anyway, Bang Bang was the best one. And also, because I watched the video of him on YouTube doing a performance of it. Well, his video, and it was great.
What was the video like?
Well, he was playing the guitar, which I think was fantastic.
I'm just reeling. I don't know about you, Steph. But Kay hasn't actually listened to the album.
And also on YouTube, he said, "Hope you like it as much as I enjoyed making it," which I thought was very sweet.
Oh no!
That's just a banal comment, isn't it?
I agree with you, Boyd.
Sweet about that.
I thought he had a very good voice.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good voice. And lovely, it was a distinctive voice because he's got a very distinctive speaking voice, hasn't he?
I was expecting maybe his singing voice to be like completely different to his.
Yeah.
But no.
Well, like operatic. I don't like it when sometimes people, you know, they put on like an American singing voice. Yeah. That really annoys me. Yeah. So I quite like it when people sing in their actual voice.
Yes.
I didn't look it up, but did he write all of those?
I think he did write.
Did he?
I'm pretty sure. So how many stars would you? I mean, I'm not even coming to Kate. She's not allowed to star. You can listen to one song.
I give Bang Bang 4 stars, FYI.
I think it's like a solid, easy listening 3.
Yeah, 3. It's a 3 for me. Yeah. Well done, Juan Rion. Dinard, out now on the iTunes, on the Spotify.
Since 2015.
Ozark. Which sounds like a kind of faintly Welsh, West Country-ish, doesn't it? Ozark.
Like a cute animal.
Yeah.
The
Ozarks. So what are the Ozarks? You know what they are? They're a kind of mountainous wilderness
region
in the United States of America. And this is Netflix's latest drama series. It's 10 episodes. It all drops in Netflix style this Friday, 21st of July. It stars Jason Bateman. He's directed a lot of the episodes. Did you know that, Steph?
He has. He's one of my faves.
Has he released an album, though?
No, he hasn't released an album. And it's created by Bill Dubuc. I think I'm pronouncing it right. Do you know what he's done before?
No,
he did. He wrote the film The Accountant, Ben Affleck. That Ben Affleck film.
Oh, with What's Her Face, that girl.
With What's Her Face.
She is also a singer. What is her name?
Lana Del Rey.
Anna Kendrick.
Yeah.
She's in it.
And they're doing a sequel to that as well, believe it or not. Anyway, we did a Netflix thing recently, didn't we? What was it? Gypsy. Didn't we? Which was also we had high hopes for Gypsy.
And
I got bored with that. I quite liked the first episode, and I carried on watching it. By episode 3, I was like, oh my God, this isn't going anywhere. And I totally stopped. This, I've watched the first 2.
Me too!
Does anyone want to try and explain the rather slightly complicated plot?
Oh, it's really simple, isn't it?
Oh, hello.
No, big talk.
Yes, Kay.
No, you said it now. This is your punishment for not listening to you.
Okay, so Jason Bateman plays a financial advisor who... it's a bit of a depressing domestic setup. I mean, he's married. He's been married to the same woman for 22 years. Loves her, obviously. He's got 2 children.
Laura Linney, played by Laura Linney, the great Laura Linney.
Absolutely, LL, and all the L's. And it transpires that she's been having an affair, which it's revealed within the first few seconds, so that's not a spoiler. Although I have to say, I didn't realise it was the same, because he watches this video.
You don't realise. Yeah, that's...
For the longest time.
Yeah, that's reveal halfway through.
Yeah, I thought it was the only one.
No, you're just with everyone else.
Yeah. That's a reveal.
I'm on the same page. Yeah. I like that. All right, well, anyway, he finds out she's having an affair, and it actually transpires that he is laundering money for a Mexican drug cartel on the side, and that's how he's making his money. Unfortunately, it transpires that someone is stealing money from the drug cartel, and they know likey, and so they... they basically come and pay him a visit, and it's race against the clock. Can he prove that he didn't do it? Can he get the money that's been stolen back to them? And can he stop all his family from being massacred?
Yeah, what's he going to do with his family? And the reason it's called Ozark is because he's going to move the family to the Ozarks.
Yeah.
Including their teenage daughter and younger boy. Her teenage daughter is another sport brat, let's face it.
Such a brat. Although
bratty.
She does have one of the funniest bits of dialogue in there when they're talking about her needing $10 for this charity of for psoriasis.
Yes.
Are you going to tell us the line?
No.
Okay.
I thought we were in sync here.
I know, we really are.
It's interesting, is it? Because it's kind of a bit like Breaking Bad.
It's got Walter White written all over it.
It feels like, and a little bit like Narcos.
We're saying Walter White because obviously if you haven't watched Breaking Bad, it's kind of a nice guy involved in something that he shouldn't really be involved in and how he copes with that.
And it's a little bit, also reminding me a little bit of like, not the Fargo TV series, but the original Fargo film, like a kind of... that kind of story of crime, of normal people, if you like, normal suburban people getting involved in crime and huge violence. There's quite a lot of violence in the opening episode, so you'll know whether you can cope with all that. But bottom line, I thought it was way more interesting than Gypsy. I mean, in terms of Netflix big 10-hour dramas, I am going to carry on watching it. There's a lot that's going to keep me compelled, if you like.
I watched the first two because I really enjoy this one. I'm a huge fan of Jason Bateman, but I always have a bit of an issue because generally most of his movies that he does, he plays Jason Bateman.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then...
His comedies, getting back to Arrested Development, of course.
Yeah, well, this is what I was going to say. Oh, okay. Arrested Development is one of my all-time best shows of all time. You can watch that on Netflix as well. And it always worries me. And what I was worried about with this is like, oh, God, is he going to just be Jason Bateman again? But actually, no, he's not. He's fantastic in this. Absolutely brilliant and utterly convincing as this character, Marty, who is basically got to move his family to the Ozarks and he doesn't even know if this is going to work and he's just so stressed.
Yeah, and there's a great scene. The key scene in it, I thought, was, I agree, I think he's really good. And the key scene is where he has to plead for his life. So the Mexican is... slight spoiler, but not really. He's like killed everyone else basically, and he's left brandishing this like leaflet, isn't he? He's like, I can find a way out of this thing to pay back the money somehow. And that's like, you think, oh, that scene must have been, he must have thought when the writer showed him that scene,
But I'm considering he's like obviously a bit of a shit to be endangering his family
this. I mean, he's a criminal.
I found he played it so well that I felt very sympathetic towards him and I was really rooting for him.
Yeah.
But hold on, because the thing is that he is laundering money, but the huge scandal is he doesn't actually know. He didn't know that they were stealing money. That's why it's such a surprising.
No, so the skimming off element. Yeah,
the skimming.
Been
but everybody's
off.
Still
off.
Doing something illegal, isn't everybody,
he? Oh, yeah, and he's still endangering his family by embroiling them in a...
Laundering tens of millions of dollars is definitely illegal.
His wife knows that that's what he does.
She's totally involved.
And let's take a moment to talk about Laura Linney. Because, my God.
Legend. I was on the Weekend with Ella Jones sofa with her once.
No.
And she was a delight. Yeah, she's brilliant. She must be the most legendary person ever to have been on the Weekend sofa, apart from maybe Lucy Kane. Yeah. Brilliant. And she's been in an incredible array of brilliant films, yes. Yeah. And she's great in this. Okay? Big
four
fan?
I'm giving it 4 stars.
Straight in there with the star rating.
Okay. I'm going to give this 4.5 stars because I'm incredibly impressed that Jason Bateman is taking on this role.
I'm going to give it 4.5 as well. Yeah. So that's Ozark. Netflix, this Friday, 21st of July, all 10 episodes. Let us know what you think at Boyd Hilton or at Steph Seenan or at Kerry Barrow. And next, of course, it's Game of Thrones. So this is the start, obviously, of the penultimate 7th season of Game of Thrones. You and I believe, are both big fans of the show.
Did you watch it at 2 a.m.? What I did is I didn't watch it at 2. I woke up at 5 and watched it because I thought, right, I'll get a good few hours in.
5's even weirder.
And then, no, because
a good chunk of sleep.
Yeah, a good chunk of sleep. And then I woke up at 5 and then had shower, fine. Came to work.
Okay, fine.
Tactical throning.
What Kay, you're less of a obsessive. But
I'm, yeah, one of the non-throners in the world.
Are you fully new to it? What's your Game of Thrones?
I watched an episode.
Provenance.
What? Yeah, a couple of episodes.
Ever?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. So, all of the six series, you've only watched a couple of episodes?
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's interesting. That's almost virgin, isn't it?
I mean,
Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Demi-virgin.
Demi-virgin, yeah. So, Steph, I mean, what did you think?
What I did, as I'm sure lots of Game of Thrones did, is I watched the whole of season six just to refresh myself over the weekend before. I made it a whole Game of Thrones weekend.
It's on Sky and Now TV box sets.
Yeah, and amazing. And what I love about Game of Thrones is every time you watch it, you kind of feel like you see something you didn't see last time. Anyway, so I was like fully pumped for it. And I thought it didn't disappoint. It was amazing. It is exactly what I wanted. It was like getting a chessboard and just setting out all your pieces, wasn't it? You know, we see the way that it opens with Arya and you just... And I, for a minute, I was like, oh, Audifrey's dead. What's happened?
Well,
and
indeed.
I didn't...
Spoiler alert. If you still haven't watched it, by the way, we're about to spoil it a bit.
But at the end of last series, you find Walder Frey is dead.
He's dead, yeah.
And then
played by the great David Bradley.
And there may or may not be a flashback or
It was confusing.
Yeah, what happens is immense.
Yeah.
Arya Stark is basically the best person in the whole show.
So I was excited because that is what they called a cold open.
In the biz,
in the world of TV criticism, as in before the title sequence, straight into a scene and you don't know what's going on. And it was confusing because we did think Walder Frey was dead, this horrible, monstrous figure who was in the Red Wedding.
Yeah.
And I was excited because they was calling it the Red Wedding. It was like, oh, what is it's weird.
We're going to find out something that's interesting.
And then it, as a spoiler alert, turned out to be her. And that was a brilliant opening. Were you confused by that, Kay?
I mean, no, I was confused by it all.
Right,
okay.
It's all gobbledygook to me. But
and then the title sequence. And then you're right, it was like what I thought was brilliant about it was that it was setting the scene, it was reminding us, it was putting all the chess pieces in place, reminding us of all the different alliances and who is where geographically and who's approaching and where they're going and what they want, and that Cersei thinks she's already triumphed and she thinks she's already in charge of everything.
Yeah.
Quickly reminded by her brother, played by the interviewee, Nicola Costa-Waldau,
that in fact,
she still is not really in charge of it. She's sort of like three bits of it.
Yeah.
It was like a York Notes for... episode,
it was
it,
a bit,
right?
But I thought it was so well done because it could have been really clunky and awful. I mean, literally, the scene of Cersei and him was on a giant map that they're walking on, and there was another scene where they go when Daenerys arrived. There was another big map, wasn't there, on that table map. But I thought those elements of it were dealt with it really well, and it did the dual purpose of reminding us where all the characters are and what they're up to and how they're all gathering for the final showdown and who's going to end up being the ruler, but. Also, it was really enjoyable and entertaining and funny as well.
And especially when they need to set out everybody's stall, don't they? And I thought actually it would be really tempting for them to just... Because sometimes in some episodes they focus primarily on one family, but actually they give everybody an equal amount of time, but you didn't feel like you needed more from one. I think it was perfectly done.
I have two words.
Oh, go on.
Ed Sheeran.
Yes. Okay, yeah.
What did you think of his frankly extraordinary cameo?
I mean, I expect him to literally pop up in everything, everywhere. And he's going to be in The Simpsons now as well. Did you see that announcement yesterday?
Okay.
Yeah, he was like, oh, this has been an incredible year. I'm also going to be in The Simpsons. I just feel like that shouldn't have happened. As a Thrones purist, I was a bit like... And
they've had weird pop stars in it before. Gary Lightbody has been in it briefly, and Sigur Rós were in it briefly. But this was different, wasn't it? Because obviously he's one of the most famous pop stars in the world.
He's just
and
they
suddenly pop up singing a song and having a bit of dialogue with Thomas Turgoose next to him off the Made in England films.
Yeah,
but it wasn't a lot of dialogue, was it? That was my problem.
No,
he didn't get enough time to...
He wanted more.
I wanted him to be transformed from just sitting there as Ed Sheeran. Because I just saw him as Ed Sheeran because he was just playing a guitar, so he wasn't embodying a character really, like Harry Styles is in Dunkirk. You believe who he is because he's acting, whereas Ed Sheeran was just
playing a song. I thought it was laughable actually.
I did.
I really did, because I think if you're going to get somebody like. If you're going to get a singer to be a cameo, I know this is going to sound strange, don't get him to sing in it. I mean, it sounded like a bonus track off his album. No one wants that.
Maybe that's because it's his main strength. Just let him play guitar.
This is my new one. Or something. Like,
yeah,
was quite,
I know.
Yeah.
It
I mean, I didn't mind it that much. I was excited to see Thomas Turgoose anyway. from This Is England. I call it Made in England. Brilliant. It was just the title of an Elton John album. Anyway, from This Is England. So that was not, I was excited to see him, but I was totally taken out of it. That's the thing. You're taken out of...
Yeah, you're momentarily like, oh, this is the Ed Sheeran bit.
Yeah. So that was a bit ridiculous. My favourite scene in the whole film was Sam Wells.
Yes.
The brilliant montage of him in the Citadel... clearing out all the shit.
Very funny.
That was unlike anything they've ever done before.
They've never done
it. It was really funny and brilliantly edited little thing. I thought it was great. I thought we'd see more stuff, kind of brand new stuff.
Have they got a new director or anything?
No, it's a very experienced director who directs all the big episodes. But I think they've just we're going to just do this really funny montage.
Because that was notably different.
It
was completely different. Like
but it worked brilliantly. It was really funny. He's a lovely, lovable character. Yeah. You know, I think it's all gathering for like someone like him to end up being in charge of everything. I feel like there's some big underdog that they're going to end up being, somehow end up being on the throne.
That's a good question, though. What did it make you think was going to happen?
That's what made me think. That's my theory.
Because I was like, oh, I bet Jamie Lannister's going to end up killing Cersei somehow. It's going to be between Tyrion's going to come back, and it's going to be like she's going to try and kill him, and then he's going to have to kill Cersei.
I think she's going to kill him.
Because, do you know, didn't you find it shocking that she didn't really care about
Didn't give a shit.
Dead?
She'd got over the death of Tommen, her son, who threw himself out the window, remember?
Is this the incest baby?
There was three.
Lots of incest babies. But her young... He was the previous ruler. He threw himself out the window because his love had died, and she just got over it very quickly.
She was fine with it. Yeah. We're still here. Oh my God, it was shocking.
Very shocking.
But that thing that she's having painted on the floor, that map that she's having painted, which looks a little bit like the map that they used to have in, you know, this morning when they jump over and show you the weather.
Oh, Fred the weatherman. Yeah. Let's not talk about him.
But yeah, lest we forget. No, we should forget. Anyway, I thought that was really amazing how now they've all got this.
Yes.
I think you just said, I think they've all got this, literally, what is the battle plan for all of us? Yeah. But ultimately, I don't know, I think it's going to be Daenerys.
Do you?
Yeah. I think she's got really...
No, I don't. I think she's too flawed. I think she's
too egotistical. Or maybe Daenerys and Jon Snow will rule together.
No, don't think that either. I think they'll all come close. I think the whole thing is going to be all these maniacal, egotistical kind of people who get carried away with their own power. I think they're all going to fail. I think it's going to be someone kind of honest and good and, you know, on a much... Yeah, that's my theory.
Do you know who's got
to
go, though? Because he's driving me absolutely mad. Littlefinger.
Oh yeah, but he's brilliantly
creepy,
Baelish, though.
Oh, he's fantastic, but he needs his comeuppance.
I'm excited. I just want to tell you one thing I was excited about.
Oh wait, go on.
Right?
Sorry, Kay.
Is that Pilu Asbeck, or how you say his name is in it, who I really loved in Borgen. He's Casper Yule in Borgen. I didn't know he was in this.
He was the one who wants to get married to Cersei in that great scene.
Euron. Yeah. Okay, so
he's the Danish Joshua Jackson.
Well, if you continue to watch Game of Thrones, he is evil. He's really evil. He is...
Really?
Yeah. He's a Greyjoy. He's a brother. And he is like a huge murderer. And he is set to be... He's a huge murderer. And he's
like
set
Jackson,
to be more evil than Ramsay Bolton.
I thought that was a great scene because he's a complete maverick lunatic. Yeah, and he arrives and tries to get married to Cersei. I thought for a minute she was going to say yes. And she may say yes soon.
I think she will. Do you know what he's going to do? He said there's a bit where he says, I need to go and prove myself. Yeah. I think he's going to try and kill Tyrion, and then he's going to bring her the head, because that's what she wants. She wants the head of Tyrion, doesn't she?
Yeah. My only disappointment of the whole episode was that Tyrion didn't really get to say anything, because I love Tyrion. That's my other theory is there might be someone like Tyrion might end up.
Yeah,
it's going to be some put upon person who's endured suffering all their lives and has been bullied or something. I think there's a few candidates in that category that may end up being the ruler of the Seven Kingdoms.
Do you think it's all going to go wrong between Sansa and Jon Snow?
Yes.
Yeah, I do too. It's brewing, isn't it?
Definitely.
And I agree.
Good. Thanks.
Yeah, she's getting a bit antsy.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, overall, a triumph.
Oh, an absolute triumph.
Yeah. Okay, a triumph.
It's got Pilu in it. I'm into it.
Excellent. Yeah. So that's Game of Thrones. It started on 2 a.m. Sunday night. I think it's going to be on every week. I think they're going to show the episode every week now. So you can watch Game of Thrones and then Twin Peaks, the new one, every Sunday night in the wee hours of the morning. But how many stars, Steph, would you give episode one?
Five stars.
I'm going to just go with the flow and give it five.
It's got to be five stars, isn't it? It was so exciting to have it back. And now, of course, it is our favourite time of the week. It's question time.
Question time.
And the question this week, reflecting the release of Dunkirk, which does star Harry Styles out of One Direction, is what's your favourite Harry Styles moment or thing about Harry Styles? Just generally, favourite Harry Styles thing.
Okay.
Steph.
My favourite thing about Harry Styles is his dogged commitment to always having an excellent shirt on.
Oh, shirt.
Shirt.
That's my thing.
Oh, no. Oh,
I love his flamboyant shirts.
So, Hawaiian. Oh,
yes.
Heart print.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he does. Do you know what he does that not many people can do? A short sleeve shirt.
He pulls them off.
Mm. He really, really does. And with whatever.
Funny enough, if you're a young international fit pop star, you can pull off a short sleeve shirt.
Yeah, like Bruno Mars. He can do a short. Oh. He can do
no,
a
but
short.
A flambo shirt.
A short.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, of course.
A super flambo short sleeve shirt. Shorts, not many people can do short sleeve shirts.
No. Yeah. I would never do a short sleeve shirt.
My other thing is the fact that he's got four nipples.
I thought he had three. Is it four?
It's four. Three. Yeah, which he showed me in an interview. He told me he had it.
Oh, hello. Oh, hello. After hours interviews.
And he showed me them. And I think that's a good USP.
Where are the other two then?
Underneath.
The two that are
so
in the normal
two,
space.
Yeah. And then he's got two little faint ones underneath.
Fake ones?
No, faint.
Oh, faint.
Not fake. He didn't just stick them on to impress me.
Hey. Like Scaramanga in Scaramanga, remember Christopher Lee? Man with the golden gun. He had three. That is exciting. Oh, okay. God. So he's two extra nipples.
Okay, yeah. So we've got shirts covering up extra the four nipples. Nips. Boy, yeah. Where are you going to go from there?
Well, I've got so many. I mean, obviously, me and Harry like that. I met him a couple of times. He was very sweet. But my favorite is in the Apple Music documentary about him that was made by my friend's production company. He spends half the thing naked, like for no reason. Like, he takes his clothes off constantly throughout it. But the funniest bit is in the recording studio, recording the album that came out earlier this year, and he just starts disrobing. Like, for no
did
reason.
You see
like,
the four nips?
Well, I'm now going to rewind.
Right, it's a rewind situation.
I didn't notice the four nips, but it just starts taking his clothes off in the middle of the recording studio, and they're like, yeah, I just want to free myself.
God, so it's his gay abandon of his clothing.
That's my favourite thing. He's also very good in
the dump for it. A similar vibe here.
We've all gone.
Takes off these flambeau shirts.
I started with the clothes, you went to the nipples, and Boyd's gone full naked.
Yeah.
Totally, yeah. Okay, so that's this week's pop culture stuff analysed in full. And we'll be back next week. Thanks very much for listening.
Bye. Bye.